The fight over development on Cumberland Island National Seashore. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead, we've got an update on the future of Cumberland Island. You can join us. Give us a call right now with your questions and your comments. It's 549-2937. Then later, Walking Jacksonville with Mark Woods. Plus, Culpepper says play ball as the Jumbo Shrimp prepare to take the field for the start of the season this week. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, we've got an update for you on the fight over development on Cumberland Island. There is a pending lawsuit to stop the building of a private dock on the island, and also efforts by the National Park Service, which manages the island, to work out an agreement with private landowners there, some of whom want to open the door to limited development on the protected national seashore. Now, the Park Service is holding a public listening session on all of this on April 12th in St. Mary's, Georgia. This is a contentious topic, and it's one we've been following here on the show for some time. Bill Bruce is a retired attorney and former legislator. He filed the first appeal, which blocked attempted development on Cumberland Island, and he joins us now in studio. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And what are your questions about Cumberland Island, the national seashore in Georgia, part of the Golden Isles chain? What are your thoughts about whether development should be allowed there or not? Give us a call. It's 549-2937 to join us. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and comments on Facebook welcome as well. All right, Bill, as I mentioned, the National Park Service is having a listening session, as they call it, on April 12th in St. Mary's. What's going to be happening at this listening session?
Well, the listening session really has to do with the development of an overall management plan, but I'm sure the subject of development and especially this dock that is being under construction as we speak will come up for and be considered. There's a long history to this. I was on your program, I guess, 2 or 3 years ago, mm-hmm. talking about essentially the same issue. Should there be development on Cumberland Island or should there not be? It's a national seashore, which is part of the national park system. I personally, and as a private citizen, feel that it should be preserved for everyone rather than be subjected to development and become another Amelia Island or any one of a number of other islands that have been developed and now have lost their wild character and all of the benefits that flow from that.
Certainly, it is one of the few places left on the eastern seaboard where you can see an island in its complete natural state as it's existed for thousands of years. It's famous for its wild horses that run free on the island. It's also known as the place where John F. Kennedy Jr. got married before he and his wife died in a plane crash. It has so much magical appeal. And certainly those opposed to any development on the island have precedent and a powerful argument. But let me ask you from the other point of view. There are a few landowners on the island. People don't realize that, but there are some landowners on the island. And their argument is that what they're seeking to do is quite limited and won't affect the overall wild character of Cumberland Island. What about that argument, Bill?
Well, we'll go back for a moment. Back before 1972, the entire island was owned by private individuals, mainly the Carnegie family.
Right.
The Candler family, which is Coca-Cola in Atlanta, also were very prominent landowners. In 1972, those people were instrumental in the creation of Cumberland Island National Seashore as opposed to a proposed Hilton Head-type development on the island at that time. And I think we're all indebted to them for that action. The problem is now that some of those same people are, I think, taking an in-your-face approach to saying, I'm going to do what I want to do, and I don't care about the public.
And you're saying members of the Candler and or Carnegie family descendants?
Well, it started with the Candler family. It's now spread into all of the private owners. When the island was created, there were about 1,000 acres that were retained in private ownership, but they still are a part of the Cumberland Island National Seashore. Those people have been very circumspect and very conservative in their exercise of whatever rights they might have on that private land up until the recent 3-year period.
And what specifically are you opposed to? Not just a private dock that one landowner wants to build, but also developing some parcels with more home construction? Is that the heart of the
Melissa,
matter?
It gets to be in part a zoning question. And zoning is governed by the Camden County, Georgia County Commission. There's a question about that because it probably should be governed by the National Park Service. But at any rate, the consensus of opinion is that it's governed by Camden County. Presently, it is zoned in a category called conservation preservation, which prohibits residential development.
And if they sign off on a rezoning, you're worried the camel's nose will be under the tent and more residential development could proceed? Is that right?
That's right. We'd love for the zoning to stay as it is.
Okay.
If it changes, there'll be some sort of development, and it depends on how much will be what the zoning change allows.
And you personally filed an appeal which blocked a first phase of attempted development on Cumberland. That's still pending before the Camden County, Georgia Board of Commissioners. When do they hope to decide that?
Well, what the Board of Commissioners did was to work with the National Park Service to see if there could be some agreement reached that would be satisfactory to everyone. It won't be satisfactory to people like me because I want to see no development and the present zoning maintained. But there's a lot of feeling to the contrary, and the National Park Service has been working now for about 2 years to try to come to some agreement with the private landowners, including the Candlers. The Candlers own a strip of land just north of the Sea Camp boat dock, which is where the ferry discharges its passengers. It goes all the way across the island, and they have proceeded to build a dock on the west portion of that into the Cumberland Island Sound. And we just think it's sort of an in-your-face approach. It has been challenged by a lawsuit filed by an environmental group. That lawsuit will test whether they have a right to build that dock, but it presently is under construction, so it's going to be an interesting question for the court to resolve.
Which court has that one?
The Superior Court of Camden County will hear that lawsuit at some point in the future.
Okay. What are your thoughts about the future of Cumberland Island? There's going to be a listening session, as it's called, in St. Mary's, Georgia, about this on April 12th. The Cumberland Island National Seashore, of course, is a protected barrier island, although some private landowners there want to open the door to some development. What are your thoughts? 549-2937. Jesse is in Jacksonville Beach. Hey, Jesse, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just wanted to say I work for the news, local news. I see a lot of underdeveloped land and wide stretches of concrete, and it's just depressing to see this stuff. I would like to do anything that we can to preserve nature, and I think we have a lot to gain from preserving nature. I don't think we have anything to gain from allowing this land to be developed on, and that's my comment.
Thanks for that. And certainly those that agree with that sentiment, Bill, will be out in force at this listening session.
I'll say amen to it.
And the Park Service is sort of the mediator here, it sounds like, but the final decision rests with your commission in Camden County, doesn't it?
That's correct.
And where are they leaning?
Well, you'll have to ask them that.
They haven't tipped their hand yet.
They haven't said. There is one member who has said, and he's opposed to it. There are at least two members who appear to be for it. But that's their
decision.
How many
total?
They're a total of five members.
I see. Okay, lots of calls on Cumberland Island. Scott in Orange Park. Hi, Scott. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I hold like 2 degrees in oceanography, a pathway through one in environmental science. One of the basics that you've learned in that is that humanity itself has overdeveloped for so long. We have essentially wiped out half of all living creatures in the last 50 years or so. Now, when you get into humanity actually hitting population, you know, in being into population overshoot, destroying ecosystems, wild places become even more critical for other species, so you don't have a collapse of your ecosystems, a collapse of whole webs that are interdependent. With climate change, a lot of things that were in the south are going to move north, and it takes time for them to do that. Like gators might be in the Chesapeake in 50 years because of climate change. Having wild places, and that goes into the systemic part that where there's a failure comes where you have a conservative mentality that's pervasive, that is anti-intellectual, anti-science, and just thinks that we can just pave and develop everything. If you have the money, you have the right, and that robber baron mentality has, I think, seen its day, and people have to rise up and fight against it.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. And let me ask you, Bill, as a quick follow-up, because we have had folks from the other side of this issue on the program before and hope to again. People that have land on the island, and they made the other argument, which is, look, even though it's a protected island, this is still my property, and I should have some say-so in what I want to do with it. What do you say to those who hold that view?
Well, I'd say this. We all, every one of us, if we own a home or if we rent it, we're subject to zoning laws. The zoning laws set up what you can do with your land and what you can't do with your land. The zoning now says you can use that land. You can use it to for your own personal recreational use, you can, but you can't build a house on it. That's the zoning requirement, and that's the requirement that I would hope would continue. The landowners, I can see their point, but I think they're misguided. They own land that is in a national treasure, a part of the National Park Service, and, you know, they've known that all these years and had an instrumental part in creating it. And I'd hope, I just hope and pray that land will stay in its protected form.
Tom in St. Mary's. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm sure that you'll continue to get comments about how beautiful Cumberland Island is and how it's a unique piece of real estate and a part of our nature. There's little doubt about that. I guess my biggest concern right now is that our elected officials and our public officials, such as the supervisor running the Park Service, they're not listening to the public. They're not supporting the majority of people that do speak up. Just as an example, in 2017, when this subject was forefront and people were paying attention and listening, we had more people sign a petition to say they didn't want development on Cumberland Island than actually voted in the recent special election here a couple of months ago. We had people from more than 1,000 people from other states, 18 different countries. All these people said that they don't want to see development on this pristine island, an island that by definition is supposed to be reverting back to its original state. That's part of the goal of the Park Service. So we have a local government, county commissioners, who do have the control and the say-so over the zoning of that island, but yet they're not representing the local community. And probably something important to recognize is they're also, they don't represent the state nor the national public who visit and enjoy that island all the time. Tens of thousands of people from around the state.
Yeah, Tom, I get your point. This is there have been people weighing in on this from around the country and even the world. And I don't mean to cut you off, Tom, but I think you made an important point there. Thank you for those comments. I just want to get a couple more calls on the air. Lots of people waiting to talk. James is near Cumberland Island. Hi, James. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. And thank you, Bill, for what you're doing. You and I have met both at Crucio and at King of Peace. I moved to this area largely because of things like Cumberland Island. My wife and I have built our retirement home in the area. We plan to spend the rest of our lives here. And I'm concerned about not only this development, this potential development project, but also what's being talked about at the end of Harriet's Bluff Road with regard to a spaceport project. I am not opposed to development, but it needs to be done responsibly. And what I would really like to hear is a strategy for how the public can come to get together and actually oppose this. I'm going to be at the listening session on the 12th of April. I'm putting it on my calendar. But I would like to hear some ideas about what we can do to make sure that our local representatives understand that if they do not represent us, they're going to be voted out of office. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Bill Bruce.
I would have to concur strongly and would hope that that many people will come to that listening session and will express themselves. The court will have something to say about the dock, but that's just a symptom of the overall problem. The overall problem is the zoning, and my prayer is that the zoning will continue.
What about his question? Is there an organized opposition group to this? And how is that playing out?
It's been a very informal group. I don't know how organized you could call it, but we have, we did, as one of your callers just mentioned, have a petition that was circulated and got well over 3,000 people who said, please, no development on Cumberland Island. We've expressed ourselves to the County Commission. We've expressed ourselves to the National Park Service. We've expressed ourselves to our state legislators. We'll keep on doing that.
And as you said a moment ago, there will be an open house, a public listening session on April 12th in St. Mary's, Georgia. They're having another one, by the way, on April 13th in Atlanta. That shows you that this is a topic that extends beyond this listening area. If you're interested in this, come on out Friday, April 12th at 4:30 p.m. to St. Mary's Elementary School. That's at 600 Osborne Street in St. Mary's, Georgia, an open house on the future of Cumberland Island National Seashore that will be held by the National Park Service. And so Bill Bruce, who has been in touch with us about this for some time, we thank you so much for driving down from Georgia to share your thoughts with us. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to be with you this morning, Melissa.
We'll continue to follow it. Much more still ahead. Up next, Mark Woods' walk across the city and its most beautiful places. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Welcome back. Well, for about 6 months now, Florida Times Union columnist Mark Woods has been taking long walks across the city. And given that Duval County, Jacksonville is a consolidated city-county government, that can result in some pretty long walks sometimes. Last week, I had the opportunity to join Mark as we took a beautiful walk through the Theodore Roosevelt area in the Timaquan Preserve. Take a listen. Mark, why do you like this area? We're in the Spanish Pond of the Timaquan National Park. This is the Theodore Roosevelt area of the park.
Right, this is one of my favorite places in town to walk, and I like that the topography changes, so you get all these different ecosystems. It's this peaceful, beautiful piece of town, and I like the story behind it, that Willie Brown, almost 50 years ago, he owned, I think it's about 600 acres here, and he basically gave it to all of us, and with the stipulation basically that leave it as it is. And so we have this place that when you walk it, you can easily picture what it could have become. And
could have been a bunch of condos.
It very easily, it almost certainly would have been. It's prime real estate. So, but instead it belongs, the idea of national parks in general, that they're belong to all of us. So this is our local national park, and I love that it's tied to our other national parks. It is, a sibling. And our local national park is also works well with city parks, state parks, so I like that cooperation. Mm-hmm. So there's natural beauty and kind of that story behind it, and the current day story I love. So.
And you've walked hundreds of miles out here, right?
Probably. When I would train for backpacking or running in the Grand Canyon, this is the spot I typically come to because it has hills. We don't have many hills, and if you want to do that in Jacksonville, you're usually going to bridges or a parking garage, or you come out here, which has back, we'll get to it at one point, the green trail leading out has a pretty steep hill that is good for training for stuff.
You can watch that video on our website at wjct.org and also at jacksonville.com, where Mark's column about his walk through the Theodore Roosevelt area is in the paper today. Mark joins us now in studio with more about where he's been walking and where he's going next. Hey, good morning.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for joining me last week.
It was so much fun. In the first segment, we talked about Cumberland Island, which is a national park, a national seashore. But also right here in our area is this other amazing national park, the Timaquan Preserve. And not enough people know about it, and I don't think enough people get out and take advantage of it. So it was a real treat to get out there with you. It's so beautiful at this time of year.
Right, yeah. It's 46,000 acres in the preserve, and those Theodore Roosevelt is about 600 acres, but it's one of my favorite pieces of it. I guess because maybe we don't have, if you go to Yellowstone or Grand Canyon, there's an entrance where you know you're entering the national park. I think here, that's part of it. People don't realize when they're necessarily entering our local national park.
Okay, so why walk? Because you've been doing this for the better part of a year now. It's
six months. My coworkers accused me of maybe stretching it out.
If you follow the hashtag MarkWalksJax, you can check out all the places Mark has walked. And there's even an interactive map that the Times Union has designed where you can see the places around town that you've walked. So tell me how you hit upon this idea and its goal.
I actually did it a couple of years ago, north to south, and just basically the premise that we live in the largest city by landmass in the lower 48. And it's also perpetually ranked as one of the worst places to walk. So kind of combine those two, I'm going to walk across this massive city that's supposedly horrible for walking. It is just such a big sprawling city that's so different from one piece to the next. So just the idea, partly to highlight that pedestrian issue, but partly just to know my city better. And you experience a place very differently when you walk it than when you drive it.
What are some examples of that you've experienced yourself?
Yeah, I was trying to last night remind myself. So I started out this one out by Baldwin. I'm going west to east. So I started in this little town of Baldwin and had breakfast at everybody's restaurant, and the rail trail, and coming through the rail yard and Beaver Street. So all this kind of west side area, and then downtown. I did the downtown's going to have a walking tour, and soon that has going to have 60 spots. So I decided I'm going to hit all 60 in one tour. Let's see, I stopped and had a beer at the Pastime where Leonard Skinner wrote "Give Me Three Steps," and
that's a peak Duval experience,
yeah,
isn't
crossed,
it?
Yeah, crossed the river on my paddleboard and walked Exchange Club Island, so that was kind of different. I wanted to walk around, include that island. Walked with the San Marco train.
The infamous San Marco train.
Yes.
It's so slow that you could walk and keep pace with it.
Parody Twitter account that I think you outed.
That's right. Actually, didn't he out himself?
I think he did.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so all kinds of walks. Do people ever harass you or give you funny looks when you're walking in a place that isn't known for pedestrians, which is, let's be frank, most of this area? Have you ever had any weird or uncomfortable experiences?
Yeah, I think there was one point when I was more on the west side where it was kind of industrial, and I'd pop in somewhere to get soda or something, and people just don't walk there, so they're suspicious of somebody walking. And I'd explain what I was doing, and I don't know if that made them any less suspicious. You're even crazier than we thought. You're walking all the way across town. But yes, that is. They think, did you lose your license? You don't have a vehicle? What are you doing?
What are you doing?
Yes.
So you're going against the grain of our car culture. And I'm glad that you are, because studies, particularly recent ones, have proven over and over again, as if we needed reminding, that not walking enough, not moving our bodies around enough is literally killing us. Our news director, Jessica Palumbo, has a standing desk here at WJCT, and she stands up all day at her desk, which makes me feel really guilty every time I walk by her office and see her standing instead of sitting, because I know that sitting all day is so bad for all of us. So I do try to get up and walk around during the day, because the human body is designed to walk. It's built to walk. It's what keeps us healthy and strong, and it adds to our longevity. And, the more we've gotten into cars and the convenience of that, the less healthy we've become.
Right, and that's why I think it's important to have, our park system, and to make, not just have that land, but make it walkable, and to have a place like the Riverwalk. We do, that's one thing I've tried to highlight is we have these issues. We have places where it's really bad for walking, and things that we could do better. But we also have wonderful places for walking. The Riverwalk, getting those finally built. And you joined me. I teased you that you waited until you didn't come walking on some of the earlier sections, which would be in the not as quite as pleasant. You picked one of the best ones.
Mama didn't raise no fool. let me just say, it's one of the most beautiful places to take a hike anywhere in town. And as you write in the paper today, if you don't know the history of Willie Brown and his incredible gift to the community, you need to get out there and see it for yourself. It's truly extraordinary what this man did.
Right.
He donated hundreds of acres of land that had been in his family to the National Park Service, and you can still go see the site where he lived without electricity or running water in his shack in the woods till the day he died. I mean, it's truly a remnant of another time.
Right. And he wasn't, this wealthy person. He barely had enough money for his own funeral. And he could have been wealthy if he obviously had sold off these hundreds of acres of land, but he said, this is a place that makes me happy. And then he decided, I want this place to make others happy. So it is truly one of the greatest gifts anybody gave all of us. And, I think it was the 40th anniversary of his death. I wrote about that for Christmas Day and said, this is a great gift to all of us. And in 2020, we'll be coming up on the 50th anniversary of his death. So I mentioned during that hike, I'd like to see us as a city, the National Park Service, the city of Jacksonville, do something to remember the 50th anniversary of his death.
I think they took your suggestion seriously, by the way. I heard you mention that to them.
Planting that seed.
You planted a seed.
I think they would gladly do something like that.
Let's take a quick call from Mark Woods of the Times Union. It's Brad in Mayport. Hi, Brad. Hey, Brad. Good morning. You're on the air.
How are you? Good morning, Melissa.
Go ahead.
I just enjoy Willie Brown's property so much, and I'm so grateful that he had the forethought to say, I just want to live here by myself until I'm gone, and I don't want to see it sold off to be the neighborhood. So when you see those one-strip neighborhoods leading to it, and you know that that was unfortunately what he had to sell off to pay the taxes, you know, the guy truly left us with just a beautiful asset over there, and really all he wanted to do was be left alone and left in nature, and lucky for us, he left all that to us. Between Willie Brown's and the Rebalt Monument, those are two of the most beautiful places in Jacksonville. You can just walk around, and they're right there close together.
I couldn't agree more, Brad. Thank you so much for that call. And when we were out there the other day, we did make a quick stop at the Rebalt Monument before we left the park. It's a very high point, one of the few truly high points in Jacksonville, with a beautiful view of the river. It's up there on the high on the bluff. And so I just encourage everyone to, before it gets too hot, to go out and take your kids out to the Timaquan Preserve and the Theodore Roosevelt area. It is one of the most beautiful wooded hikes you will ever experience, truly.
Right. And yeah. I guess, yeah, to give people, if they don't know where it is, the Fort Caroline National Memorial is right across the street, right across Fort Caroline Road. So you can go to the visitor center, the main visitor center there at Fort Caroline National Memorial. Most people know where that is. And across the street is the Spanish Pond parking lot that is one of the entrances to the Theodore Roosevelt area.
That's right. Get out and enjoy our national park and read Mark Woods in today's Times Union. Mark, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
In a moment, marking Alcohol Awareness Month with Tracy.com. Stay with us.
You keep saying you've got something for me. Something you call love, but confess.
In the occupied territories, most fruits and vegetables come from Israel.
The carrots are Israeli carrots, as you see. It's produced and packed in Israel.
But Samir was determined to grow purely Palestinian produce.
Then we decided that this is it. It's mushroom. Let's do mushroom.
Planting a homegrown protest on the next Reveal.
Saturday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, April is Alcohol Awareness Month. Someone that's done a lot to bring awareness is local media personality Tracy.com, Tracy Collins. She's the author of her personal memoir on dealing with alcoholism, Stumbling into Sobriety. And she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for being here.
I'm excited. I kick off the book tour today.
You are on a book tour around the not just Jacksonville, but the country.
Yes.
To talk about stumbling into sobriety this April for Alcohol Awareness Month. As many who've read your book and seen your interviews know, you went through treatment after you sort of had a breaking point with alcohol and wrote an amazing book about it.
Thank you so much. I will tell you, the reason I wrote the book is because as I was coming out of the fog, I thought, man, life is getting so much better. What kept me from doing this so much sooner? And I realized it was the shame and the stigma, which I've learned since then, is the top two reasons why women in particular stay away from asking for help. And the other thing is, I was afraid of what life looked on like on the other side. I thought, you know, is it boring? Do I have to, you know, stay home? And I'm about to hit 50. Am I going to be that old maid now? Oh, my goodness. Such the opposite. Such the opposite. Because, as you know, like you, I'm a creative. And that creativity died in that bottle. It drowned in that bottle. And when I got sober, it was like an awakening. And it has been fantastic.
You've really impacted so many people by sharing your story.
And that's thanks to you as well, Melissa, because a lot of the outreach came from the couple of times I've been on your show. So thank you so much.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, you have a project in conjunction with the book.
I do. So there is a fundraiser going on right now to get me to even more communities. You can go to either stumblingintosobriety.com and donate there. If you donate $25 or more, you get a free book mailed to you. Or you can go on Facebook and donate on there. One of the things that I did want to mention before I forget, I was thinking about this as I was in your green room, that I was the scariest kind of alcoholic, and that's the functioning alcoholic, because nobody knows what's going on. We are so good at masking what's happening, and we pick up on cues when people are getting too close to the truth, and so we adjust our actions based on that to keep our secret. And that pushes us further and further into isolation until finally we die from either heart, stroke, or cirrhosis of the liver. The heart and the stroke and face planting are the ones where nobody sees coming, including yourself, and you're doing that behind closed doors, and suddenly your friends wake up and you're dead and they don't know why.
And when you got to rehab, didn't they tell you that you were close to maybe dying or becoming seriously ill?
Yes, because of the levels that we're registering for cirrhosis, which is a painful disease to die from, by the way, that was going to be progressive. But I also learned that because I was about to turn 50, between the ages of 50 to 55, women typically who binge drink like I did on a daily basis will die from a heart attack or stroke.
Alcoholism has particularly horrific effects on women's bodies, even more so than as bad as it is for men. It's even worse for women, isn't it?
It is, because it metabolizes slower. I've watched this great movie. If you have Amazon Prime, I watched this great movie called My Name Was Betty. And it gives you some fabulous statistics that lay it out as simple as can be with graphics that will blow your mind. And then I also watched Lipstick and Liquor last night. And that also is a great one for people like myself who, you know, are presentable in public. We get up every day and put on a smile on our face, put on those pumps and our lipstick, and we head out the door. And at night, people don't know what's going on. That's a great, great movie for people who are suffering like that.
The most important thing, too, I think that people have to understand as we talk about Alcohol Awareness Month, Tracy, is that this is a disease. Mm-hmm. I just ask that people remove judgment and try to remove stigma around this, because this is a disease, and you would not judge someone with heart disease or cancer in the way you might judge someone with an alcohol or a substance abuse problem. People need help and support. They need treatment. And as you know, I've walked this journey with a very dear friend who you helped. And you know, I would ask employers and loved ones to understand this, first of all, and then also do everything you can to get the person into treatment, because that can be the hardest thing of all.
Right. And you have to, you can't strong arm someone into treatment. I guess you could, but unless they're there because they want to be there, because they're ready to give up the anxiety, the sleeplessness, the obsession, the constant mind games going on, they're not going to embrace everything. But yeah, if you can present if they're logical people like I was, and you can present them with good hard facts, and then just pray for them and, you know, encourage them at every turn with love, you can't shame someone into sobriety. But I will tell you, to the alcoholic that is listening right now, and you know you're an alcoholic if you know you're an alcoholic, that this is a disease. Your brain metabolizes the alcohol different than your friends. So whereas you could have a glass of wine at dinner and drink only half of it and walk away, I would reach across the table, drink the rest of yours, then go home and start on the vodka.
Yeah.
Because my brain gets that vodka in there, it starts to metabolize it, and it becomes like a peanut allergy. Like if I ate a peanut and I broke out, it's the same thing. I put alcohol onto my brain, it metabolizes it and shoots a signal to my brain that says more, 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 more. And there's nothing you can do about that other than ask for help and surrender.
Right. And get into recovery and get support in your recovery. Get a community around you.
Yes.
Because isolation, as you said, is a hallmark of this disease.
It really is. And you have to believe when I tell you the other side is so much more beautiful. All that stuff that you're afraid of, that fear is a liar. I have done I got voted in Folio Weekly 2 years in a row as Best Righteous Crusader, and I've done more in my 2 years of sobriety than I did in my 20 years in the media here in Jacksonville. So it works, I will tell you. Once you take that fog off of that brain knows how to repair itself. One of the things that scared me was I felt like I was having short-term memory loss, and the first thing that my doctor said at Greenfield Center is, this will go away. And it did. All of my brain function came back. It was so beautiful.
Well, you're beautiful, and we love you here. So thank you so much for all you've done to help people struggling with alcoholism. Tracy Collins, go to her website, stumblingintosobriety.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Culpepper's up next. We'll be right back.
ViStar Credit Union, focused on offering services for its members from checking and savings to loans and health savings accounts. ViStar, we never forget that it's your money. Information 777-6000 or vistarcu.org.
Arbus Magazine, focusing on the arts, business, and culture that enhance the quality of life in our community. February's 25th anniversary issue highlights the celebration of Cuban arts and culture in Gainesville. Arbus Magazine, in depth, in touch. Arbus.com.
Is there a place for cars in cities of the future?
If we are to continue to grow, we must be able to move.
Congestion pricing plans in New York will charge drivers to curb gridlock. We'll look at what other countries can teach the United States about the cost of mobility. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Boeing is in the middle of its worst crisis in years, a crisis for the company and for its workforce.
Time is of the essence, and Boeing has to address these as soon as possible.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Boeing and the people who make its planes, next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Comedians die on stage, but rarely like this. Jason Weems was revived after his heart stopped. A question nagged at him. What's the first step you should take when life gives you a second chance? Bouncing back from a life-altering event. Funny and frank tips from comedian Jason Weems. Next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap Up with Culpepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it is just about time to kick off baseball season in Jacksonville. She's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? That's right. The season opening home stand for the Jumbo Shrimp is this Thursday. Can you believe it? Culpepper is here now with a look ahead to playing ball. Hey, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, Jumbo Shrimp open on Thursday. The season opening five-game home stand loaded with promotions, as you might expect. Always creative in what they do over there at the baseball grounds. Post-game fireworks after the first three games. And at the opener, Google is taking a 360-degree picture for Google Street View from the pitcher's mound during the seventh inning. I'm told that your face will be blurred out, but the rest of you will be available. So if there's a outfit that you really want to show off to the world and maybe to posterity, this is the time
this
to do that.
This is your debut.
To
all
do
right.
that, so they get it
Didn't
going on Thursday.
Did they do that at the football stadium a couple years ago, too?
They did a 360 shot. I don't think it was specifically for Google that I'm aware of, but they did that where it's, you know, so fine, the detail, that you can zoom in and find yourself among, you know, 60,000 people. This one, so if somebody wants to Google on Google Maps the baseball grounds of Jacksonville, you can drop your little man right there on the pitcher's mound and be able to see what it all looks
Cute.
Like.
Yeah, so come on out. It's always fun at the ballpark, and the Jumbo Shrimp, like so many other minor league teams, they've really taken the fun factor up as high as they can.
Yeah,
so
no doubt about it.
Going to be fun. Okay, the Icemen are headed to the playoffs.
In
How
their
about
second
that?
Season since moving to Jacksonville, they defeated the Atlanta Gladiators 4-3 on Saturday, and then Jacksonville clinched a spot of the postseason on the strength of a 4-2 victory by the South Carolina Stingrays over Atlanta Sunday afternoon. Jacksonville right now holds the third seed in the playoffs, but could move up to second before the end of the regular season. The top four teams in each division make the playoffs already. The Florida Everblades and Orlando Solar Bears have clinched spots in the South Division as well. So plenty of Florida representation for the ECHL postseason.
That's great. That's great. Kudos to them. Okay, let's get to the big news. The Final Four is set. How did you do on your picks?
Melissa, I want to tell you, when the Sweet 16 began, all eight of the teams that I had picked to the Elite Eight were still alive in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I was feeling pretty good about myself. I thought things were going to go very, very well.
Okay.
I had Duke winning it all.
A lot of people probably did.
The most common pick, they're out. I had Florida State making it to the Final Four. They got knocked off by Gonzaga. I had Tennessee, and I had North Carolina. So my bracket officially busted.
Oh, man.
But we do have an interesting Final Four in several ways. We'll have Texas Tech against Michigan State in the late game on Saturday. First ever Final Four for Texas Tech. Michigan State has been to now eight. This will be the eighth Final Four under Tom Izzo. Virginia and Auburn in the other game. Virginia in the Final Four for the first time since 1984. Longtime basketball fans will remember that was the Ralph Sampson era. And Auburn had never made the Final Four. But all they did was beat the three most tradition-steeped programs in college basketball history, the three winningest programs in the history of college basketball in succession, Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky, to make the Final Four.
How about that?
That is very impressive. Semifinal games tip off Saturday in Minneapolis, and the national title game is a week from tonight. You'd have to say that Michigan State has the experience with Tom Izzo at his bench, but Virginia is the only number one seed to have made it, so that probably means that Auburn is going to win the national championship.
Well, good luck to them. You know, it is amazing not to see Kentucky or Duke. When I started my career a long time ago in Lexington, Kentucky, every year during March Madness, Maker's Mark would make bottles with blue wax instead of red wax. It was all about go blue and go UK. So it's just that is the whole culture there.
Well,
for
and
them
not, just,
not to be in it is kind of a big deal.
And not just there. If you think, you know, this is the teams that I think of as college basketball's blue bloods: Kansas, Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke, UCLA, and Indiana. This is the first, or rather just the second time since 1985 that one of those teams or more are not in the Final Four. So the Blue Bloods did not have a good run here this year. Maybe they will be uncorking some of that Maker's Mark to drown their sorrows.
Yeah, exactly. Nice to see some other schools get a chance. Okay, last but not least, just about a day away from the NFL draft, when the Jaguars hold the seventh pick in the first round.
24 days away.
Oh, excuse me, yep. 24 days away.
Yep. Jaguars, most common, you know, when you look at the mock drafts that are put out there by various analysts, most commonly it's Jawan Taylor who the Jaguars will pick, the right tackle from Florida. But there are some others that could be in the mix, including some defensive players, believe it or not. That's a very deep defensive end and defensive line draft. So I don't think it's a surefire bet. And it's also a chance that Taylor could be picked before the Jaguars select. One draft analyst has him listed as the third best prospect in the entire draft. So we'll be talking about some of the potential picks for the Jaguars as we get closer to the draft. I know a lot of Jaguars fans will say, draft on offense. Get somebody there to help Nick Foles out, whether that's on the offensive line or a pass catcher.
And one last mention, the weekends with Florida State's spring game.
FSU trying to bounce back from their worst season since Bobby Bowden's first season in Tallahassee. Going to be interesting to see how they look to bounce back. The Gators spring game, by the way, a week from Saturday in Gainesville.
So much happening. Always follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Catch him every night on Channel 4 and every Monday morning with us. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And comments are always welcome. Email yours to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. 1A is up next. And on tomorrow's show, a look at Equal Pay Day. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, just keep listening to the Electro Lounge. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.